Yesterday I sat like this. Rabbi Dr. Mark, Lieutenant Colonel Mark was here. He gave me from the Join the Republican Jewish Coalition, Donald Trump, most pro-Israel president ever. Aaron Cutford would add, Trump was zeicher what a few million American Jews were not. Shomer Shabbos grandchildren. Nein hara. Shomer Shabbos, not just Jewish. Kanein hara. Today's a very interesting Shia. Today's November 11th, 2019. And once again, it's interesting. Last year I drew a bigger crowd Monday than Sunday. Yesterday we practically had no empty seats in the classroom. It's mazel. I can't, because Sunday I figured everyone's first getting back. But Baruch Hashem. Today is November 11th, 2019. As I just said, I welcome the wonderful students sitting here and the many listening. Mark asked me the Shaila. It's an interesting Shaila. We are all saying V'ten Talamata L'Vracha. He's visiting from America. What does he do? In America, they don't begin till December 4th, December 5th. It follows the solar system, the equinox, 60 days later, etc. Yitzchak is sitting here suffering because he holds that Israel needs rain now. Everyone should be praying for Israel. Right now, Yitzchak, relax. So you see, it's not, what Chaim just said is not so correct. What does that mean? You're referring to Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni is a Shaila. Which way do we look at it? It could very well be. Wherever you are, you do Minhag HaMakom, or it's the community you belong to. If you're looking at Megillah is where your feet are. In Yerushalayim, it's Tetvav, and in Bethel, it's Yudalit. But Yitzhak is right. We need rain. So see, there's an additional factor here. He's visiting Israel. So you should know, I wrote out all the makarot for him, but if you look into the Mishnah Brura, Kufyud Zayin, Sifkat and Hay, the Mishnah Brura, look into the Sharim Mitzuyunim Bahalacha, Sif Yutet Heara Bet. You can look into it here, Jack. You can take this and give it to Mark if he comes. And you can look in, you'll see. Number one, there's one viewpoint. What you just said. In Israel, do like the Israelis. In America, you go back, you don't say. Another viewpoint is, know that if you're in Israel, you have to say it. When you go back, all right, then you're in your own community. In other words, I'm not saying that viewpoint is one viewpoint. Then there's another viewpoint. Wait a minute, you're living in America. You can't even start. When you go back, December 4th, December 5th, you'll start. Then there's a viewpoint. No, while you're in Israel, you do say it. But then when you go back, what Yitzchak says, Israel needs rain. How do you stop saying it? So there are two shittot. Either you continue saying it, period. All right, Mark, I'm answering your question. Either you continue saying it, or Rav Shlomo Zalman's psak seems to be that you begin here and daven like Israelis. Mark, do me a favor, sit here so you don't block Yitzchak, and Herbie also sit where you won't block.
There's a real bottleneck outside.
They're starting to work there, right?
Two large trucks with it.
God have mercy, I'll have to fly home with a helicopter, but we'll try going out the other side. And then there's another viewpoint that when you leave Israel, you don't say it in Birchat Hashanim, but in Shomei Tefillah. Because in Shomei Tefillah, it's not an interruption. You can add whatever you want there. So it's a very interesting question. And I'm inclined to follow the third sheet there, and Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach. That once you start saying it, say it in afterwards in Shomei Tefillah. And then when you go, when everyone begins in America, so you join Israel again. Yes, Morty.
One case you didn't ask is what's it? For Israelis in Kuslarts
So it's Rain of Chatzaros. It's also the same machloket. It resembles right down the line. If you're there for more than a year, then you're like Americans. If you're there less than a year, then you're like an Israeli, basically. But then again, there's a viewpoint the Israeli should say it in Shema Koleinu. Even if you're visiting your granddaughter in Sydney, Australia, so there's one viewpoint, she should begin when Israelis begin, but say it in Shema Koleinu, because it's not yet this Monday. All right, listen, no matter which way you do it, you Yotzei, that's for sure.
How come when we have Tfilat Geshem, we immediately say Tfilat Geshem?
Because Tfilat Geshem is not a bakasha, it's a description of God's Gevurah, Shevach Vahod, Shevach Shalakadosh Baruch, Shevach Hodaya. So that you can say anytime. And I can tell you something else, what do we say during the summer here? We say, v'tein tal, help me out, morir hatal. What do we say, morir hatal, right? Morir hatal, right? Am I right? Because my mind goes back to childhood, I never heard of that. You should know the tremendous advantage of saying morir hatal is that if you forgot the same Masha Baruch, and Morgan said, Morgan said, but the Yavid Yotzei. And you should know these years, heard the Rav say, the Rav, Mori Rebbe, he said, I tried to teach myself to say Mori Chatal like they do in Eretz Yisrael, and I couldn't succeed. I had to give it up. He was stumbling over the words because you get so used to doubling. You understand why? If you say Morita Tal, you never have a problem with did I say Masha Baruch Morita Gashem or not. You follow? And the Rav said, I tried to train myself, but I couldn't succeed. I just want to say one more thing. And yesterday, Shia, Jack left me on the phone a message. We were speaking about Masachek Bekuvya, right, with the racetrack. So Jack said, well, there's something else wrong with Masachek Bekuvya. What you're saying, the Rishonim say, Eina Osek B'Yishuv HaOlam. But Jack gave me a whole explanation of what's the difference between Masachek Bekuvya and buying, what do they call, futures, right?
I picked that as an
example. But that was excellent. I got a whole receipt from a man who deals with finance. He explained to me, when you're dealing with futures, what does futures mean? Mark has oil wells. He wants to be sure he gets $30 a barrel. So he sells 1,000 oil wells now, promising to deliver them in half a year. Half a year later, the oil wells have gone up. They're $60 a barrel. He doesn't get an extra penny. But the guy who bought it, he doubles his profit. So that's gambling too. But that's gambling where you are helping the Yeshiva Olam. In other words, it keeps the money going. You know you have money. You know you're guaranteed. You know you're not going to lose money on the oil. The other guy gambled and won big. He's going to reinvest it.
He could have lost.
But it's not like Masachik Bekuvya or horse racing. All right, so I enjoy it. Okay, now let's get back here. My dear students, what we're going to see today, and it's irrefutable, and we're very blessed that more of the archives have opened. You have no idea what a blessing it is and what the archives have. It's a treasure chest, because generally speaking, people outside of Agudas Rabbanim, you know, and they say the RCA, helped the skelter whenever they moved from office to office, everything was lost. But responsible organizations, I'll put it that way, the archives are filled with material. And if you can get an archive that hasn't been played with, in other words, to be politically correct, you get a world of information. So we now have a world of information, Avram Katz, the family, as I explained last week, the archives, and Professor Robinson, his research, second to none. Mark, do you know the Robinson family in Chicago? Ask them if Professor Robinson, who I've been quoting here, I can give you his name in a second. I don't want to waste time. But I've been quoting him. If he's a member of the family, Ira Robinson, he's in Canada today. He's a professor, and he lists himself as having American citizenship, and Canadian citizenship. May very well marry a girl from Canada and winds up a professor in Canada. So he makes the point that when they went to trial, and this has happened time and again, how do you change from Orthodox to conservative? The whole concept of a trust, a public trust. And you have to understand that's a financial issue. And it makes sense. I gave $1 million to an institution that I wanted to be, and I was convinced, and its charter read that it's an Orthodox institution. 50 years later, they're Mechalel Shabbos b'Parhesia. So it's robbing my money. All right, whether a court can enforce it, and what is the Shomer Shabbos, you're getting involved in the secular court, and even in Israel, it's an interesting thing, a lawyer, we'd have to bring in a Supreme Court justice here to comment on the question and give us the sources. Interesting question. Now, in order to establish what Orthodoxy is, they set up in a hotel in New York, and they subpoenaed the most famous Rabbanim, both from the, to use modern terminology, the Europeish world, what you would call the Agudas Rabbanim, and the more Americanized Rabbanim, later what we would call Herbie D'Arce. We're talking the mid-20s. And the Rabbanim, there was a whole series of questions given to every rabbi. Solomon Goldman, Ira Robinson says, there's no record who did the cross-examination, but from the archives that now are revealed, it appears that Solomon Goldman himself did the cross-examination. What's interesting is he didn't bother the Europeish Rabbanim. He asked them the same questions, they gave answers, you'll see later what Reb Lazer Silver answered. He didn't bother them. The American rabbis, he pulled out a knife, and he went after them with zest. And here, we left off last week that he's cross-examining Rabbi Young, Leo Young, and what he's trying to show is, what, I'm not Orthodox just because I made a few compromises? You made many compromises too. And he digs Rabbi Leo Young that he has a elevator in his shul taking the people up to the sanctuary run by a guy. And Leo Young answers him, all right, it's a machlekes ha'peiskim, and I have a heter for it, from Rabbanim, and even though we do it, it doesn't make us any less Orthodox. And that's what he answered. Herbie, I want to tell you that this elevator is not a simple matter. Open up the book that I quoted many times. I happen to own the book. I picked it up. It was jobbed out and reached Israel, and I picked it up for pennies here because it's, it was published many years ago. And what you don't sell, it's one of the big problems with publications, where do you store all the books that you don't sell? And they job it out. The JPS, if you recall, used to get rid of their books, I think $1 a book at the end of about 5 years. Every book went for $1. So here is Reverence, Righteousness, and Rachmanut, Essays in Memory of Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. I quoted this volume extensively a year ago, published by Jason and Aronson, who are out of the business today. Unfortunately, they did publish some very valuable volumes. Go to page 218. And in page 218, and I thank my Talmud Nachum Shmayok who called my attention to this. Page 218. What, you think that Rabbi Young was so pious? Some of the Agudas Yisrael people challenged him. He's not that frum. And eyewitnesses tell the following story. When Rabbi Ochanan Wasserman visited America, knew, give me the year, we've referred to this so many different ways, 1938. And his visit played a big role, Litova, not so much Litova afterwards, as you may recall from my work, the Silver Era. So he visited, and he was in Brooklyn, based in Brooklyn. He spent the Shabbos on the Upper West Side. And they took him to Davin, Rabbi Leo Young Shul. I can guarantee you these were balabatim of means. And when they came to the shul and he saw the Jewish center elevator operated by a non-Jew on the Sabbath, he refused to use the elevator. According to Rabbi Hanan, where do you have a heter, a mira la'akum? Even if you positioned him on a Wednesday or a Thursday, as we said in the Sunday class in a different context, it's still a mira la'akum. A non-Jew taking you up in an elevator. So you see that Solomon Goldman, nibe v'lo yadama shenibe. Anyone who wants it afterwards can take it. There's many more pages about Rabbi Young. But the nibe v'lo yadama shenibe, he pushed Rabbi Young against the wall, and Rabbi Young answered correctly. I can tell you the Rub was matir. In other words, I think I mentioned that last week. L'dvar mitzvah, going to shul, going to the Sudat Shabbat. You may even make a case that going to sleep on Shabbos, that itself is a dvar mitzvah. So no matter what you're doing Shabbos, it's a dvar mitzvah. They're already showing him hold that a mira lakum doesn't apply to a dvar mitzvah. Certainly, if you're not well, if your legs have gone in you, today I would have no problem squeezing out a heta from the Rav to use an elevator on Shabbos with someone taking me up and down. But it's fascinating. And that was Rabbi Hanan. Rabbi Hanan, I told you the story a thousand times over again, Jack. These are stories I live all the time. I don't want to repeat them the same year. But you know the story, what Rabbi Hanan did at the wedding, right? That I mentioned this year, when he kisses the, when the, he's Masada Kedushin and this Balabas says, I'll give $1,000 if the Rashid be Masada Kedushin. So he's Masada Kedushin. It's America, 1938. And the Chatan V'Kala kiss at the end, right after they break the kos. And Rabbi Hanan was very upset. And Talmidim said to him, what are you so upset about? They're married. He says, this is the safe from the Torah. Mm-hmm. The last words in the Torah are what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Le'enei kol Yisrael. Okay? So that's one story that comes out of it. Another story, which is a little sadder, is he was very opposed to YU. And he couldn't get over that in the college. And this is a question way beyond the class of today. Do we run a college like Machon Lev? Or do we run a college like YU? And he was upset they teach in YU at Yeshiva College at the time. Bialik, Achad Amir, you can take courses. It's not they teach, no one forces you, but there were courses. So later, when a student got a visa to save his life and go to Yeshiva Shul Hanan, he asked Rabbi Hanan. Rabbi Hanan told him, no, it's spiritual death there. Worse than physical death, if Torah V'Das would invite you. And I have a copy of the original letter in Rabbi Hanan's writing. It's in the Suvi era. So his visit caused quite a bit of turmoil, and it sort of was an overture to the chasm that will come after World War II. In other words, in two World War II, Torah V'Das, Yisrael Hanan, Chaim Berlin, they were more or less very, very close. After World War II, the split begins slowly, slowly but surely. In my time, the split was there, but there still was a connection. In other words, if something happened in Torah V'Das on Shabbos, we knew about it Sunday morning in Shiva's Yisrael Hanan. Today already, it's two different worlds, etc., etc. Okay. That's his son, Rav Simcha's Rabbi Hanan's son.
It's terribly sad because of him and others who had the same views, people went to Auschwitz instead of America.
No, we know that, but that's Hester Panim. What can you do with
it? I'm not talking about God now.
Hester Panim has to do with God. Yeah, but Hester Panim, look, Yitzchak. You heard me say 10 years ago, I quoted Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, the Mashkiach of Panovich. They asked him in the late 50s, early 60s, they said, you Rebbe, in that time from Das Teira, we talk everything was in Yiddish in Israel. We talk Das Teira, and he said, had we listened to Reb Chaim Moshe Grushinsky, we wouldn't be here. They asked Reb Chatzkel. Reb Chatzkel gave a beautiful answer. He said, look, Rabbanim can only paskin and answer and give advice. Derech HaTeira, Derech Yeshara. When there's Hester Panim, it means that normal thinking will not win out. Teiridic thinking will not win out. And they answered correctly, God willed otherwise. So yeah, I don't want to attack Rav Elchanan, but there's no question that the split, what happens afterwards, it was an overture. An overture. And I heard this, you know, again, I wasn't born yesterday, to put it mildly, I heard this from old timers, from Teira Vadas. I remember Rabbi Isby and others, we were talking, and they said Rav Elchanan's visit had a big effect on what would happen afterwards. Mm-hmm. Now, then,
how much of this closeness between the issues had to do with personality
involved? Well, what you're just saying is how much of the split had to do with personality. It has to do with Rav Elchanan. But there's no question that Mr. Mendelovich recognized Rabbi Revel as the first Adam Gadol to build Torah in America. If you need any proof, Chelik Dalet, Rakafet Aaron, it's right there. Today, Torah Vadas puts out a volume celebrating its 100th anniversary. I can barely lift the volume. It's a coffee table. Ellie, I gotta get a grandson to my house to lift the volume for me each time to put it on the table. It's a fascinating, beautiful, beautiful volume. But, Art Scroll History, no mention of Yeshiva Sushkana, no mention of Eitz Chaim, no mention of 1886, no mention and it's 1996 when Yeshiva Sushkana is organized, no mention. All that Torah begins in America is 1902 with RJJ. And what's funny about the volume, many pages later, they mention that when Torah Vadas began a high school, they didn't have the secular classes. All they had was a Beis Medrash. And the kids used to take the train from Williamsburg to the Lower East Side and go to Yeshivas Vishochan. And suddenly it appears, what Yeshivas Vishochan? What are you talking about? What's the barra? Not mentioned at all. More than that, and this is Minas Shemayim, and I still am shaking. I can't get over it. There is one picture. I've gone through now over 300 pages of the book. There is one picture of a yeshiva university graduate, Yeshiva Shochanan Musmach, on page 245, if I'm not mistaken. And that is one of the people we alluded to yesterday, that the New York Times has a field day with the scandals that were at Yeshiva University. Need I elaborate? And I hold that's a punishment in a Shemayim. You didn't tell the truth. You put in here this picture. How's the picture get there? They're showing Torah Vadas, and it's a beautiful volume. Don't misunderstand me. But unfortunately, this is their mentality today. They can't be like Rakefet, that I have my own hashkafa, live my own way, but I'm the happiest guy in the world to see students become from Eid HaRedir to Agudat Yisrael, all the way to Chovevei Torah. Well, there's plenty of difference of opinion in hashkafa, and we'll talk about the Rav on November 28th, Be'ezrat Hashem, but if you're showing me Torah mitzvah, kol hakavod. And that picture, how does it get there? Because it says Torah Vadas graduate this, that. One of the things they did, they helped support an organization called Nefesh Achat, I think it's called. Yitzhak, correct me if I'm wrong. It deals with children that they want to abort, save the people from aborting the children. It's all part of that general organization. Done terrific mitzvot. And the executive director could even be the founder in Israel, was one of the two people that everyone knows their names, but I don't want to mention. And there's his picture with some Torah Vadas graduates. I couldn't believe it. Okay. Let's go. Let's go. Rabbi Goldman is now in his prime. He's asking the rabbis all these questions. One second, did I lose anything? Here it is. Okay. So, he asked Rabbi Young once again, the elevator, and then he goes further. Tell me, Rabbi Young, you read literature? Since when are Jews allowed to read literature? Chochma Bagayim, but that's not literature. Literature? Schmutz, romance. And Rabbi Young answers, yes, you're right. There are limits to the literature that we should read. And we shouldn't be reading, I'm quoting Rabbi Young now, the reading of any literature that harps on sex stuff. Not exactly eloquent English. Sex stuff. But you see, he's pressing Rabbi Young. Who are you to tell me I'm not orthodox? Look what you permit. Then he goes after Rabbi Young. Tell me, the women in your shul, the women in Orthodox shuls, their heads are uncovered. How are you allowed to daven if women do not cover their heads? No, do you recognize what we're talking about? I could give shir on this for months. Eli, the Yoruch HaShulchan, Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Ungarische Rabbanim, oh my, Rab Tzvi Yehuda the cook, Rab the Satmar Ruv, what a, no, unbelievable. But then he goes even further, Mishama, I apologize for talking about this in public, but this is from the archives. He says, not only are their heads not covered, but many women dress, if I don't pronounce it right, correct me, in décolleté fashions. Am I pronouncing it right? Anyone here speak French? Yitzchak, you know what it means? All right, I don't want to elaborate. Boy, is he right. Let me tell you, I was Masada Kedushin many times in Maplewood, South Orange, and under the chuppah, I had to just look at the Hamadrich. Not at the Chatan Vakalata. What did you have in the rabbinate? V'day l'chakima. In Israel, lo aleinu, it's even worse than America. The people who are not from, they come to the wedding half-dressed. So the rabbinate, and they all do it now, they give out scarves, like at the Kotel. Mm-hmm. So they, under the chuppah, they put a scarf on. But he's pressing Rabbi Young against the wall. And Rabbi Young tells him, in my shul, a woman who would be dressed like that would be asked to leave. As far as the head covering, you're right, me'ika hadin, but there are those that permit it. With Rabbi Drachman, he went after shaving. You shave. Your balabatim shave. Where we came from in Europe, who shaved? Which rabbi shaved? No one shaved. And here, you claim you're orthodox? And Rabbi Goldman, a man who wishes for the orthodox and principle of religious practice will not shave. And he's pressing poor Rabbi Drachman against the wall. And I'll tell you, you know, this is with their mentality. It's like I used to have experiences at the Kotel where people would come and they'd bring their children over, or grandchildren, to meet Rav Rakefet. And I could see these poor kids, you know, they're products of the 80s, the 90s, the swing to the right. This is Rav Rakefet, clean shaven, no black hat, no indications of frumkeit. Look what he looks like, any bum on the street. And these poor kids, and I said, have rachmanis on your children. Just tell them this is Aaron Rakefet. Don't overstate the case. But Rabbi, you see what Rabbi Golden's doing here? He's putting the knife in. He's trying to turn it. And Nebuch, the rabbis have to answer what they answer. And I, you know, if he was put me against the wall, I would fight back firmly and strongly. But this is 1925, 1926. It's not 2019 and 2020. And nowadays, I will admit the first one, if I go into the Rabna today, I'd have to have a beard. How can you be in the Rabna? Everyone has a beard. All my Talmidim have beards. Short, big, little, trimmed. But without a beard, you can't be around. But we are from a certain period. Yitzchak, myself, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zeichat Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Riskin, the Rav was totally clean. Little Van Dyke here, otherwise totally clean shaven. All right, it's the influence of the Western world, I admit it. I look at my great-grandparents, long beards. But Chaim, ich ken besser lernen. You understand that? I'm a Litvak. I can learn better than my great-grandparents. So they can have the long beards. I have to learn. Charlie, a Litvak. Blight al Litvak. Baruch Hashem.
Rabbi Drachman answered.
Yeah, no, Rabbi Drachman, he said that there are ways of shaving that we do a sanction, but it's more important to see what Rabbi Goldman is trying to do than what they answer. Then he puts him against the walls, Rabbi Drachman. Rabbi Drachman was not a great Lamdan. He was trained in a reformed and a conservative rabbinic seminary in Europe and a terrific Jew. But so he puts him against the wall and men and women shake hands. No? You know how much we can talk about men and women shake hands? What do? Men and women shake hands. How are you allowed to do this? And again, Rabbi Drachman answers, yes, here too, there are those that permit it, and he doesn't have it here in the text. I imagine he told them in Germany, and there's, you know, tremendous machloket. Hungarians did not shake hands with women. Polish Hasidim did not shake hands with women. In Germany, if a woman offered you her hand, they took the hand. I can tell you halacha lemaisa, and I've told this story over the decades, but I don't believe I told it this year, with Bernard Revel Graduate School, with Pearl Cotton. We knew Yitzchak, what's the story? I came in.
No.
This lady was crying. Pearl, I went in to wish her a freilich in Pesach. And she was crying, a widow, a terrific lady. She ran the graduate school. Bernie Landa was in motion, and she was the one who tied his feet to the ground. And she was crying. I say, Mrs. Cotton, why are you crying? And she says to me, Arnold, you won't believe what just happened. And she tells me this guy, it was a right-winger in the graduate school. She offered him her hand, and he wouldn't take it. And she said, a half hour ago, Rabbi Soloveitchik was here to wish me a freilich in Pesach, and I offered my hand, and he shook it, and she was like, ugh. Now, on this topic, a lot has been written. Seichel Dachman Haven. I once got the Shaila, the Machon Gold girls, used to meet the BMT boys down at Richie's. Vic, you don't know what Richie's was, the first pizza shop. It was the meeting place Saturday night. It's before Yitz came in Aliyah. No, and the guy tells her a good Devar Torah. She wants to shake his hand, give him a Yasha Kayach. Absolutely forbidden. Da'pab Maseichel, a young girl, a young boy shaking hands. It's fire and oil. But if a 50-year-old woman offers me her hand and because I helped at a moment of sorrow, all right, could be there's a heta. But he pushed them against the wall. Then he goes to Young, Rabbi Young, mixed dancing. And here, Professor Robinson quotes the historian Jeffrey Gurek. I don't know if Jeffrey Gurek is a historian. I think he's more of a sociologist. But, you know, he's written on the men and women of Yeshiva University. He's written on sports in Yeshiva University. And he quotes Jeffrey Gurek as saying about mixed dancing in the synagogues, a widely honored in the abuse in this era. And Rabbi Young admitted, I would never see it. I would rather not see it. It seems to be not in accord with Jewish practice. It is one of the of those cases where the rabbi cannot enforce his view. Rabbi Goldman doesn't give up. He quotes Shulchan Aruch HaRechayim 529, subdivision 4. Now what's that talking about? Cholamoid. You have to put up guards. The men and women shouldn't mingle. He says, you mingle all the time. All right, during davening you have separate seating. But outside of davening, men and women mingle all the time. Don't we have this problem until today? Don't they, didn't they in Beit Shemesh put up signs like in Square Town, men on one side of the street, women on the other? Remember what happened in the Supreme, one of the justices here went, I think it was Meltzer, went crazy. They have to take the signs down. They'll be fined every day. They took them down. The police came. They put them up again. They took them down. They put them up again. Get me sugar. But, or you, there are bakeries in Meir Sharim where there's signs up. Gvarim, Nashim, two separate lines. And inevitably, it's the women serving the men and the men serving the women. Take a look next time you're there. And then I was once in a bakery, Meir Sharim, so they have to give you change. So there's a little cup, and the woman puts the change in. She shouldn't give it directly to the man's hand. When it came my turn to take whatever is buying the baked goods, she took one look at me, she gave it right into my hand. She figured with this ice buff, you don't have to be so machmir. But it's amazing how this Goldman, you can see his background, he was not an Amoritz, and he went after the rabbis one by one. The Americanized rabbis. The Americanized rabbis. What's there to argue?
He's
trying to make a point. You can tell him it's machlokes apaiskim with shaking hands. You can't say it's mutter by everybody. He's right. There were plenty of those who asked. All right, we have yeshem yule smoke. Dancing. How do you find the heter for dancing? And it went on in Rabbi Young Shul, went on in Rabbi Goldstein Shul.
In Ramaz.
And they say once in Boston they began, and the Rav was told, you got to step in. Yes, Morty.
Why didn't they answer it? Rabbi Schweiss last night was talking about the difference between stone and pilegish and eva.
Right.
And why one was destroyed and the other wasn't. And he said, because one was institutionalized. The other was individual.
So that's it. You suffer from a well-known illness that Rakefit already gave a name to in 1969, Savlinitis. And what Morty just said is exactly my next words. What Rabbi Young and Drachman did tell Goldman is you have to differentiate between the halacha and the reality. In our shuls, we try to live according to halacha. We don't say all the Jews are frum. It could very well be that some of these Jews are not frum at all. But no one is going to come into an Orthodox shul and change the sanctity of the shul. And here they got involved in a whole discussion of the Balabatim. Goldman says, most of your balabatim on Mechalalei Shabbos. And they answered him, correct. But they're not going to come into the shul and say Chilul Shabbos is correct. You understand? Well, just exactly what you said. The Reform and Conservative institutionalized it. Everything is mutter. We live with the reality. There's the, in modern Hebrew they say Haratsui Vahamatsui. Ellie, you understand that expression? Haratsui vahamatsui. In modern Hebrew, that hits the nail on the head. What are we going to do? Drive away Mechalalei Shabbos? What's the whole purpose of the shul? Let them come. Maybe one day we can be makar of them. Wasn't this a giant step of young Israel? No one believes it today. Today you go into young Israel, 99% of the people daven gerushim the Torah mitzvah. Right or wrong? Go to any young Israel. Even across the length and breadth of the United States. No? Why did Young Israel Institute, it was revolutionary, the late 19s and the early 20s, only Shomrei Shabbos can be officers. I remember that like yesterday. I remember growing up, the young Yishuv in the Bronx, two-thirds of the people were Mechalei Shabbos per Pahesia. But the offices had to be Shomer Shabbos. And this is the way they answered Goldman, that you're raising many questions. Some of it is legitimate. Some of the challenge is correct. Women are walking around without their head covered. Women are coming into shul, not properly dressed. I used to be mockpit in Lower Merion, not Lower Merion, in Beth Ephraim, my shtel, which I built from the ground, 62 to 69. So whenever invitations went out, I used to ask the people, put in a line that they should respect the sanctity of the synagogue in dress and deportment, or deportment and dress, I think is the way I phrased it. And it helped to a certain degree. But remember, you're dealing in a world where these women today, look at this generation, if they're not religious, to them it's absolutely normal to walk around like that. They can't understand why we object. Their attitude is live and let live. We don't tell you how to dress, don't tell us how to dress. And by the way, this has come up in courts of law, where you have cases of statutory rape, seduction, etc. So people will make a case, but look how the woman was dressed. And there were judges that took this as a factor. Of course, the Me Too generation went hysterical. And there were studies done that show a woman does not understand what motivates a man. See, the world was created that a man, certain things attract him. It's what leads him to seek out a wife, to make his compromise. I don't want to quote the Midrashim to you. It's not the place now. But the Chazal understood it very well. But the women, why can't I walk like this? It's her privilege. Why? There was a whole thing in New York that they wanted to go topless on the subways. It was a miracle that the judges ruled against it. But this is what you have to understand. But Goldman is right. But what do? Shut down the shuls because women come, their head is uncovered, their dresses are not proper, not sneistic, etc. It's unbelievable what went on there. But more than that.
In Borough Park, there's a kind of bakery, the name not being mentioned, that when a woman comes in on Friday with her hair uncovered and she orders challah, they automatically slice it.
So b'dieved she has to take two slices if she can in yitzhak.
No,
I understand. Zeichel adavah, she's a frum woman, her hair uncovered. A Satma bakery, what Buddha Park, alright, some Zankism. They're gonna have real problems in Borough Park with Gare. The split in Gare deeply affects Borough Park, if you're aware of Borough Park, what Borough Park is. And the support there, from what I'm told, is like 70-80% in favor of Shoal. Unlike here in Israel, where they're afraid to break away, even if they want to, because their kids have no, they'll be thrown out of the Gera education and go to Rav Shach. Let me tell you, never a dull moment here. More than that, now you recognize why we have to say Hallel on Yom HaTzmud. If anyone tells me to say Hallel Yom HaTzmud, I tell him he's a Kaifa Be'ika. He doesn't believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, plain and simple. Why? That we should survive. No government now. Where's there going to be a government? What kind of government are you going to have? Look at our leaders. Look who Gantz is. Look who Lapid is. Look who Lieberman is. Take a look what's going on. And we have an army, and we have Iran, and we have tonight, Yemen threatened to wipe Israel off the map. It's beyond words. And Ribbono Shel Olam, not only are we surviving and thriving, life expectancy here is higher than I think any other country in the civilized world. I think only Switzerland may be slightly ahead of us. It's 80, according to, I'm not yet achieving life expectancy, according to the latest figures that I read in the paper. And the shekel, take a look how the dollar can't rise. When you go to a Civil War cemetery in America, you go, you see signs, enter the cemetery, the dead will rise. They believe it, theatamatim. And here, the dollar will not rise. The shekel, someone's running the world. All right. Let me go a drop further. Not just in halacha. conservative rabbis. They have a thrill, I don't know why, of denying anything that we believe in happened in the Torah, never happened. So Goldman publicly gave a sermon already in Cleveland that there was never a flood. That how can a modern, intelligent, sophisticated person believe a flood? And he builds an ark, and he saves all the people and all the animals. This is ludicrous. And this caused a storm. He got up and said it. Now, I have the same parentheses that no conservative rabbi will say that today. For one simple reason, the Gilgamesh epic and a lot more that's been discovered, you find so many parallels to the flood story in the human concept, in the human gestalt, that it's impossible that there wasn't a flood. That the tradition is all over the place. Same thing with the Hammurabi code and other Hittite code. You find the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach right there staring you in the eyes. And research has been done, particularly by German rabbinic scholars, where they take the ancient codes and divide it up, Sheva Mitzvot B'nai. It's fabulous, fabulous work. Bieberfeld, if you're familiar with his work, Bieberfeld, but others as well. So they're not going to attack that. So Goldman says, you call me an apikores that I said there was never a flood, and he says to the rabbis, and this made big news in the newspapers, do you believe that Bilam's ass spoke? Vayiftach Hashem et picha aton? If you believe that, then you're stupid enough to believe there was a flood. And this made headlines do you think there is no difference between the traditional point of view, between the story of the flood and the story of Aton Bilam? I say, and he was pressing Bublik, the editor of the religious Jewish Yiddish newspaper, and Bublik says, I say that a rabbi who denies from the pulpit the story of the flood is reformed or conservative. He wouldn't get involved with Bilam's donkey. The newspapers carried stories, either rabbis believed that the ass spoke, or rabbis criticized a rabbi who says the ass didn't speak. Gentlemen, let me tell you something. Having lived many decades and having lived totally with the Jewish people for hundreds of years now, research, whatnot, I have no problem whatsoever with Bilam's ass. I have seen so many jerks speak. They make Bilam's aton look like a genius, plain and simple. Kol hakavod to the aton. But wow. What Goldman was trying to do, what Goldman went after them, And this is why the newspapers, who were of course not friendly to the orthodoxy in those years, certainly the headline of an article in the Tug of the 3rd of November 1927 says it all, quote, Bilam's ass, the flood, and the question, can a rabbi kiss a bride under the wedding canopy, discussed in a hearing against Rabbi Solomon Goldman of Cleveland. And one after another, the English newspapers hopped on this trial, the Jewish monkey trial over religion. Now, while all this is going on, there's the insoluble problem, and you've heard my lectures on this, people quote it, and I think I hit the nail on the head. Some quote me and give me credit, some quote I was plagiarized on this issue or some scholarship I published. And they called the guy who plagiarized me, it's all mine. But all right, that's part of life. You have to take it with a grain of salt and count your gains and forget your losses. Mordechai Kaplan. If Mordechai Kaplan had not been around, there's a good chance most of these questions, dilemmas, quandaries, schisms, chasms could have been bridged over. Good chance. Money speaks. And to have a YU and a JTS, and it's basically the East European element that's supporting them, why do we need two? We can have one. And for the price of 1.5, have one major institution. And Mordechai Kaplan was the individual that caused the split irrevocably. And as you all know, Mordechai Kaplan, on one hand, he had followers that swore by him. He was a very charismatic personality. I don't want to go into a story of myself and Mordechai Kaplan and my car and the tzitzis and the fringes, or Jack and Yitz will say, we're studying with the Rebbe, Jack will say 30 years, Yitz will say 20 years, we heard this. Yes, you heard the story before. Yitz, did you tell the Rebbe off when he repeated the story? I heard the same story from the Rebbe 50 times, but 50 different years. That's life.
The relationship with you is not the relationship with
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. I'm only twitting you.
When you say Rebbe, I don't never heard anybody call him Rebbe.
What?
He was not a Rebbe. He was like a professor of Talmud.
I don't speak that way about my Rebbe. You had to know how to... You're right. He was not Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik.
He was not
Reb David Lipschitz. All right, we'll see if that's in the book.
His knowledge was far beyond him.
No, his knowledge was one of a kind, and he was a genius. And geniuses, look, you know Chaim. He was your classmate too, right? Chaim Soloveitchik. Chaim's a genius of geniuses. But with the real world, you have to learn how to be flexible. The Rav married, had three children, had a wife that spruced him up. It was a great gift. And over the years, the Rav mellowed. Unfortunately, he mellowed too much because of all the tragedy that hit him. Halavai, he wouldn't have mellowed. But the year of the triple, first of all, I even remember before, got to remember the operation. By all medical science at that moment in time, he should not have survived the operation. Remember how sick he was with the cancer, with the blockage. And Baruch Hashem, he survived. But from that point on already, that's after we had him. It's after his prime. It's a little bit after. I still was with him a year or two. But then the triple availeth. And by the 1970s, as the story is told in the documentary I was supposed to bring into the world, the kid says a sfera, it is the 1970s, and the Rav says, Chaim Soloveitchik, one of the people in the Shia turns to Chaim Soloveitchik, since when did your father tolerate such stupidity? Something to that effect. The exact quote you can see there. And they both shrug, you know, the Rav today is old, not well, flexible. He was more of a Zaydi, more of a grandfather. In our time, you're right, there was a Yirat HaKavod, a Yirat HaKavod. But you could pierce it, you could pierce it. If you were willing to debate with him and fight with him and talk with him, there was a Yirat HaKavod. And I don't want to go further, but the letter that the Rav wrote to me, that Aaron Lichtenstein called the most important letter my father has ever written, in my opinion, Aaron is saying. And because of the kola, they said, Rebbe, use that as a haskama for your work on the Rav. Look at that letter again, and you'll see that he appreciated a student who understood him. That letter, I should announce, 1 year, I'm giving a whole course, 30 lectures on one letter of two paragraphs. If I'd be a Chabotnik, I would do it. But, all right, let it stand this way. The Jewish monkey trial, Mordechai Kaplan. Now, Mordechai Kaplan had people who swore with him and swore at him. His whole life story, as you all know, he was born, his father was a big Yudapesha Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Israel Kaplan. R.J. Day, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, brought him to America to be a member of the Beit Din, his Beit Din. And the kid was firm. He went to Yeshiva. It was called Chanan. But you heard me yesterday. Sometimes we fail miserably in Chinuch. Miserably. And we fail, and sometimes even the Rebbeim don't know what the basic Yiddishkeit is. It's not just learning in Shas and Paiskim and Frumkeit, understanding who we are, where we're coming from, where we're going, our responsibilities. Listen to yesterday's shiur.
Yeah.
All right. The end of the teens, Mordechai Kaplan becomes a public apikoros. There's no Matan Torah. God may or may not exist. Judaism as a civilization. They couldn't live with him and couldn't live without him. Now, Mordechai Kaplan left us a wonderful gift. He wrote a diary, recorded day by day by day what was happening. Recorded his innermost feelings. The diary is available, JTS. I hope their library is open again. There's a Xerox copy of it right here at Hebrew University. The diary has never been published. Ellie, do you know why the diary has never been published? When you will finish Washington and make a CM and bring a bottle of liquor to class with some kichlach or ruglach, you'll say one thing to the Rebbe. Rebbe, you wrote 530 pages, and I continue another two chapters in Chelek Dalet. Not one negative word. Remember, I told you I got this compliment? I appreciate it. Mordechai Kaplan, in his diary, is very honest. He maledicts people. He praises people. He lets people have it. He slings mud at them. He speaks about Balabatim and other rabbis as members of the zoo, not much more intelligent than a chimpanzee, etc., etc. It's a fish shop. They could never publish the memo book, or what's it called? His diary. They could never publish his diary. But it is available. And it's unbelievably valuable. And he viewed what was going on. I mean, he's living in New York. He's at JTS. He's famed already. He knows everything going on. And in his diary, you will see at this moment in time, it is impossible to go on being false. We are not Orthodox. We are conservative. With a capital C, it is time we stood up and announced it. Perhaps this decision, he's talking about the court decision, will have the effect of ultimately breaking up that unnatural alliance between reactionism and progressivism. And then he says, I am thrilled with this, because until now, the Rabbinical Assembly has been paralyzed. What's the Rabbinical Assembly? What the JTS graduates organized, their rabbinic body. It is placed in a position where it can do absolutely nothing of any account. And now he feels we're not Orthodox. We don't have to kowtow to anyone from rabbinic world, Orthodox rabbinic world. We are conservative. We stand on our own two feet. We can act. We can improvise. We can permit. We can change. We can alter. We can innovate. Mordechai Kaplan, his diary saw it all. He picked it up beautifully. He was not a dummy. He was a brilliant individual. Now, this story with the trial. I remember what I told you at the first court ruled it's a religious matter, we can't get involved. The appeals court ruled that it's Orthodox, it's a trust, you can't change. The third court ruled that the first court was right, and ultimately it never went beyond, it never went to the Supreme Court. There was never a definitive ruling, and the people on the ground ultimately rule. And this happens time and again. And when you put something to a vote, what can I tell you? Yetzer lev adam ra minu ra. We read it a week ago, week and a half ago already. The overwhelming majority took the Jewish center and turned it into a conservative temple. This too had an implication that's very interesting. Many years later, in the 1940s, more neighborhoods were changing in Cleveland. And shuls were combining and moving on. And here they're coming to Cleveland Heights. And there was a very famous rabbi, Rabbi Israel Porat. Maybe you've heard me lecture about him. I taught many of his descendants. It's an unbelievable family. Wherever you turn, you will meet Porats in Yerushalayim, elsewhere. They're all Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. He was a Talmud of Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. He wrote wonderful Svarim. And he saw what was happening and what had happened. So in the 40s, when more shuls were combining and moving to Cleveland Heights, he warned them, it's good for Torah that we're combining and putting our strengths together. But don't make the combination too big. Don't bring in too many shuls, too many people, because we see from experience that Torah will lose out. The majority votes with its feet. And that's what happened afterwards in the Mount Clemens case. Yeah, they tucker won in court. So the conservative element pulled out of the shul that left them with a handful of members, and they went and built the big conservative temple down the street. And Rabbi Porat, he already understood the situation. Combine, but do it that you're still in control. You're not going to give every Tom, Dick, and Harry the right to vote and to throw Torah away. I'll make one final comment before we go to Reb Lazer Silver, which you'll enjoy, you'll see. One final comment. Rabbi Porat was right and not right, thank God. What do I mean that he was not right? After World War II, with the influx of the survivors, the Sherit HaPleita, the seeds are planted for a much more dynamic, popular, mass Torah observance movement in America. You take a look what's happened today, 60, 70 years later, we can have all the Orthodox shuls in the world combining. No one but no one will take down the Mechitza today. And you have to give credit, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and you have to give credit to the influx that happened afterwards. You want a proof that I'm right? You can take Chovevei Torah. You can take Shira Chadasha. You can take all these innovative movements. But no one but no one has taken down the mechitza. It's very fascinating. Shira Chadasha, have a mechitza, right? Women lay in, women this, women get a Leah. I shouldn't matter if they lay in, they get Maliyah, they daven Kabbalah Shabbos, but there's a mechitza. There's a mechitza. It's interesting. And Allah had come of a kamar, if the left-wing element already is careful, look what will happen further. And I'll show you after, I don't believe if I have it here, I have it here. I thank my students, particularly Steve Gross keeps me apprised of what's happening in the greater Jewish world. So you have a YU graduate today, a YU musmach. He just became, I think it's over 2 years ago now, he is the head, the dean, the president of five different Protestant theological seminaries that combined, and he is the dean. And I couldn't believe my eyes. They write about he builds a sukkah and no one has a problem with it. This year he entertained in a sukkah on the campus. And you see a picture of him speaking and must be his wife sitting a row behind him, her head covered down to here. And they asked him, who are your role models? And he answers right to the point. He doesn't say Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. Doesn't even say Rabbi Steve Riskin. Rabbi Kenny Brandon, no. Rabbi David Hartman and Rabbi Irwin Greenberg, Yitz Greenberg. But it's interesting. Here is a guy, Rebbeinu Shalom, he's taken the Hartman Institute, I don't know. They do, during the summer, they have classes for Gentiles, Jews, and priests. Am I right, Yitzchak? Right or wrong? So he's taken it a step further, and he's the chancellor. And he'll succeed. Poor Rabbi, my dear student, Rabbi Dr. Berman. He has so many problems. He spend money. And homos marching, lesbians, whatever they call themselves, marching on campus. And kids running around without kippot. I don't mind the girls without kippot. It's a good thing. We'll probably have girls running with kippot. Some Zayin Gezunt. And here you have 5 theological seminaries under his guidance, and he's a king. No problem whatsoever. But all right, be it as it may, Solomon Gordon, very interesting chapter. Now, we want to learn who Solomon Gordon is, what he was accused of. You'll see this all ties together.
Goldman.
What did I call him? Gordon. Sorry, I have something else on my mind. Get Gordon out. That's the Torah Vadas book. You'll see with your own eyes, page 245. And it's a beautiful book. Halavai Yeshivas Chachamim would issue a book like that. It's with such love. I mean, these beautiful people. Ugh, but why aren't we intellectually honest? What would it hurt? I have problems with YU today. I just gave a dear friend of mine, Barry Liebman, I gave him a copy of the Stern College book and a copy of the Yeshiva College book they give out here to attract the kids. I say to Barry, do you recognize the yeshiva we went to? Do you recognize the Stern College we demonstrated against? Remember, Aaron Lichtenstein admitted in public, we all demonstrated, the Mashkiach said that Lenin Frein, they did, who wanted Stern College? It'll be down the block. You don't know what went on in 53, it must be 53, 54. Herbie, could be we had a criticism of YU today, could be. But don't deny what Shmuel Chanan was, Eitz Chaim, Rabbi Revel. Wow, don't deny. I give credit to Rakefet. I want to thank him personally for coming up with that Modot Evel when Rabbi Revel died. Mr. Mendelovich's Modot Evel, Teira Vidas. I thank my good friend, Aaron Rakefet. Nice guy. Yes, Yitzchak.
When you mentioned Mordechai Kaplan,
yeah,
that is really a very important
thing.
People don't realize he did some things that were good.
Right.
People, I think he had tremendous influence on the Reform movement because they are talking about doing it as tradition, quote unquote. Not because the Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded.
Right.
So all of a sudden you have them having a palace and having a yarmulke. I'm not saying that that all of a sudden is a big thing.
Right,
but it's different.
Right, it's different.
And at the same time, he did not believe in the Kodesh Baruch
Hu. Right.
And so when he davened, he took Samson Nathan Rosh's idea of a reflective thing. It alel. You're talking to yourself.
Right.
There's nobody out there.
Right.
So this is not a person with whom
you couldn't. That's exactly it. You couldn't compromise. You remember what I told him when he showed me his fringes? Mm-hmm. I said to him, "Yes, you wear them because of the Jewish." He was so excited. I knew his book, The Jewish Civil Life, was published in 1934, if I'm not mistaken.
And he actually has a lot of truth about being a civilization.
No, not to say that. But I said to him, "My fringes are because God commanded me." You can't win. But you know, he was an old man, a nice old man, and I've met relatives of his who are Shema Torah Mitzvot, so I have to watch what I say in public. But you're right. He was the insoluble problem. They couldn't solve it. You see the letters. You see what I published, postdoctoral research. It appears in Rakafet Aharon, I think, Chelik Bet. You'll see Chelik Aleph or Chelik Bet. They couldn't solve it. The money was there. The Balabatan didn't know the difference. You think Jacob Schiff cared, enlightened orthodoxy. And they could have solved the method of learning. In other words, if you understand what I personally went through, my whole learning was yeshivish learning. After this, I went to Bernard Never Graduate School. When I came to Israel, I went through Professor Avram Chaim Friedman's book on Kedushin V'Nesuin. That book turned me in, gave me insight into Shelet and Shuvat Chachmat Yisrael. It could have been done. The Chachmat Yisrael, you leave for postgraduate. You follow? First, the student has to know 1,000 Daf Gemara and has to know how to handle a psak of the Rambam and understand what the Shulchan Aruch is all about. Then, postgraduate, broaden him. Could have been solved. But couldn't solve Kaplan. That was the insoluble problem. And Kaplan had tremendous insight. You gotta give him credit. I developed this with proof and that proof and this proof. Kaplan says right away, there he is, saying it in 1927. We are conservative with a big C. Go fly a kite, you stupid, outlandish, outmodish, so-called Orthodox Jews. You follow? He said it plain and simple. Goldman is trying to say, I'm as Orthodox as you are. You compromise. Shave. The women, no head covering, the face, their dresses, half naked, etc., etc. Goldman said it to me, let them have it. I'm as firm as you are. Ah, do you believe the flood really happened? Bilam says spoke? No, you know what the Rambam says in Moreh Nevuchim. Yes or no? A dream. I don't agree with the Rambam. I have no problem.
Nobody said there was no...
No Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim, no Kriyat Yamsev, no Matan Torah, no anything. Then what do you have Judaism for? And you see what happened to their kids. That's the tragedy. There's a whole article, the Makor Rishon just discovered America. Should be 30 million Jews in America today. I tell you the story, my mother's family is... My mother ties me to Rabbi Rebel. She's a Calvaristki. I'm a Calvaristki. Rabbi Rebel was a Calvaristki. There was Yeshiva of Chevron, Rabbi David Cohen today. I ought to go over one day and say, Shalom Aleichem, my cousin. Guy will faint, but then I'll explain how we're cousins. Atami Mishpachet Calvaristki Bukovno, etc., etc. So now I understand my grandmother so much better. What she saw the whole Yiddishkeit. Flipping away, and her husband, my grandfather, had learned in the Lashon, but America, ugh. So there were six children, right? When my mother died, she had more great-grandchildren than all her five siblings put together times 10. Got it? Just listen to the figure I told you. If we figure now the great-great-grandchildren and the great-great-great-grandchildren, my mother has more than all her siblings put together times 100. And that's the answer. There's nothing left. They said they have no religion. By the way, I just saw this on a Rich Sheva that they finally understand. The average Jew in America is not reformed, not conservative. It's a garnished. No religion. A religious. I don't know what. Trump goes to church every Sunday. I want to get Trump to go to shul every Shabbos. Like that, we have more hope than his going to church. Take my word for it. So, but look, and yet they don't concede. They don't concede. Remember, Arnold Dyson went to a treif dinner celebrating Clinton's daughter's marriage to a Jew on Shabbos. Remember? And he went, what he had, where? A talis. And if they were holding a Hanukkah candle, I mean, it's... All right, we have our work cut out for us. I've done my share. I plead with the youngsters listening. Take it further and light the kindle and candle the flames of Torah in dignity. Let me just begin. The Silver Era. Now, the story of the Silver Era is very interesting. Fortunately, unfortunately, it's probably my most firmest work, because it totally seeped into the tremendous Haredi world of today. And I can tell you some of the biggest names in the Haredi world cite the Silver Era with love, joy, and even awe. Now, how do I come to the Silver Era? And this is the story. When I was doing my research on Rabbi Revel for my doctorate, so one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Revel, who was quite well known, was Rabbi David Silver. And a number of times I went to view Rabbi David Silver, and he gave me documents from Rabbi Silver to his father, and we became quite close. He was a very impressive figure. I mean, a man who came to Harrisburg as a youngster and remained the rabbi for 60, 70 years, never left Harrisburg. Show me how many other American rabbis were able to do that. Built a day school in Harrisburg. It was always a small community, but an important community. It's the capital of Pennsylvania. So I met him at the Kotel, the early 70s, late 60s. Early 70s, it has to be. Remember, I used to daven every Friday night. Now my feet don't allow me to. And he said to me, look, your work on Rabbi Revel is superb. Would you like to do some work on Rabbi Silver? I have archives on him. Photograph it, send it to you. So I told him, I don't need a second doctorate. Go to Bernard Revel Graduate School, tell them you spoke to me, and tell them I suggested they take a young man, assign this work to him, you'll give them the archives, and let him do a proper work. So I have to tell you, 1 year went by, and no response. I checked it out myself, and the answer I got was, I hate to say it, that to do a doctorate like you did on Revel is too hard. You have to create Yesh Mayayin. What they want to do is edit a text or put together on response to literature where it's there. You understand the material is there. All you have to do is play with it, but you don't have to create it Yesh Mayayin. So a year and a half went by, so I agreed. And I have to say that they transferred, it's all photocopied, but a good deal of the archives. It's right down the hall here in my office. And I worked, and the results turned out the Silver Era. What enabled me to do such a, I hope, a fine job on the Silver Era was the fact that I could see black and white and not be prejudiced. Because Rabbi Silver was, and Reb David Silver was totally white. Reb Lazer was gray. There was a mixture there. And I was able to deal with him as he was and take all the good points from the white and from the black. Now, one of the most fascinating parts I found was he was deposed in New York in the hotel, and the whole deposition was in the archives. So if you're familiar with the Silver Era, Appendix 2 is word by word the deposition that he goes through. And here you can see that these questions were all formed by Rabbi Solomon Goldman and by the lawyers representing Abraham Katz and his element. So you'll see, it's interesting to read. Who are you? What's your background? What is Orthodox Judaism? To believe and to keep all the traditional laws, what's in the rabbinical literature since the Mosaic law, including the Talmud law, the Code of Cairo, and other rabbinic laws. All right? Very true. No, none of us could differ with this. This is halacha, davar Hashem zu halacha. It obligates you. Then, what is traditional Judaism? You see, this is what they're pressing for. That there's orthodoxy, but there can be traditional Judaism too. Are we? Aren't we orthodox? Traditional Judaism is that which is based on the rabbinical literature. What is the difference, if any, between orthodox and traditional Judaism? No difference. May a congregation devoted to the cause of traditional Judaism properly describe itself as orthodox. Yes. Understand what they're pressing him? And he said, what is the traditional law in Judaism? And he goes right back. It's like a circle. Traditional law is the same as traditional Judaism. All the laws that are written in the Talmud and Code of Cairo and the other rabbinic literature. So you see, this is, he stands firm that if you call yourself traditional, it means you are orthodox. There is no difference. You are bound by Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah Shebichtav. What is conservative Judaism? The same as reform, because that is the first step of reform. Well, it's very interesting. Here's a man saying this in 1927. Look where conservative Judaism is today. Hard to believe. Is there any difference between conservative and reform today? Probably 90%, absolutely not. Probably 90%. I don't believe the conservative rabbis would encourage you to eat tarfus outside of your house. Maybe the reforms say, doesn't matter, these laws are not applicable today. I don't believe there are any other differences. The shul, the davening, the women, the instruments playing, etc. And they go on and on pressing him, but he refuses to budge. Do you know, Yitzhak, listen to this, do you know Professor Kaplan? Rav Leis answers, yes, I heard about him. Do you know what his position is with regard to Orthodox, Reform, or Conservative Judaism? In my view, he is a Reform Jew. Okay? He doesn't distinguish. And Yitzchak said something which is very correct. The Reform movement has moved closer to tradition in the sense they will not throw you out of a shul today, out of a temple, if you walk in with a kippah. I can tell you, Dov, that I was thrown out of Temple Emmanuel because I had a kippah. If you don't believe me, it's in Washington. All right?
I had the same experience. I took the kids from the little town of Westchester as a treat to New York for 3 days. And we went to Temple Emmanuel. And they would not let us in, the usher, because they were all wearing yarmulkes.
Right.
And so I said to them, I taught my students that wearing a yarmulke is respect for the Torah, and as long as there's a Torah in your ark, we have to wear a yarmulke. He says, you can't come in.
So that right? They literally threw us out. I mean, so there is a change today. They will not throw you out for wearing a kippah.
But also, the Reform Temple will have a sukkah. Now, they're not doing it because the Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded it, but Kaplan wrote that the son-in-law wrote in his
book,
Eisenstein, that the sukkah reminds us of the homeless, of the people who are without. So when you're sitting in the sukkah, you are identifying
with the homeless,
with the poor people. So they're not doing it because it's a Zeichel and Tzitz Mitzrayim, but 40 years in the desert, Ashkocha.
But you've got to be careful that the sukkah is built properly. I can tell you, in Maplewood, South Orange, the Reform Temple, the sukkah was built inside the sanctuary.
Right, it
was unbelievable. It's not a sukkah, it's a zeicha. Zeicha ledava. Baruch
atah melech olam shekol nieh bedvaro. I got an invitation to Reform wedding that has pleased dress in accordance with the Reform manner.
Which means, what does that mean, a Reform manner?
But what? Like no yarmulkes, they
do. Oh my God! Okay, and then they hit away at him. United Synagogue. Do you know? Do you know what the United Synagogue is about? Yes, I know about it. Do you know how its membership is made up? I know they have a couple of hundred congregations. Do you know whether these congregations are partly Orthodox and partly conservative? And here he gives a classic answer. Partly Orthodox by mistake. What does he mean? Partly Orthodox by mistake. So I interpret it. No one has interpreted that for me. But what I understand him to mean is that the Orthodox shuls are making a mistake belonging to United Synagogue. And then, I'll end off with this, we'll go further, you'll see what happens afterwards. Then they ask him, do you need separation of the sexes in a synagogue? And what are the sources for it? And here, you know, he knew all of Shas Paiskim by heart. He goes into four-page discourse on all the sources, beginning with the Gemara in Sukkah, that I always cry when all the machlokes about the kotel, no one opens up their mouth. That separate seating began right here at the kotel, the sugya in Masechet Sukkah, daf nun aleph, Ribono shel Olam. No one opens up their mouth. But Reb Lazer Silva, wow. But there's a lot more I want to show you because it reflects on Rabbi Goldman. But notice, there's no cross-examination of Reb Lazer, of Rabbi Revel, of Rabbi Seltzer, of all the right-wingers, Rabbi Ramaz. That didn't bother Solomon Goldman. They're beyond the pale. We're not going to influence them. They're lost. They're dying out. That's what the Roosevelt's advisor told them in 43. These rabbis represent the breed that is dying out. You don't have to pay attention to them. But the young rabbis, wow, he goes after. And you'll see the implications because this ricochets, it boomerangs, and it gives birth to the modern Orthodox rabbi. Just as this develops the conservative movement with a big C, and it's a gradual process, but now they're writing conservative with a big C. You see what happens as a result. This is the fertilization of what leads in to the Rabbinical Council of America. Read me, Yitzhak. That doesn't happen overnight, but the seeds are now being planted. So to reiterate on this beautiful Monday morning in Yerushalayim when they're preparing for snow on the East Coast, and Yom already is worried we're not going to have any rain this winter and we're going to soon be crying and davening for rain, but I can only tell you it's very good for humans, this weather, second to none. You don't need a jacket to walk around in Yerushalayim today. Maybe by night you'll need a light jacket, but wow, we are enjoying the beautiful weather that occasionally can happen here. I can only tell you, when we came in Aliyah 69-70, that winter, there was no winter. God had mercy upon us. How many of you remember? There was no heat here. Who heard of heat? I used to teach in Michala wearing a coat, gloves, and a hat, and at times the earlaps were over my ears. And God had mercy on us Americans. We came, we didn't know what we're getting into, but that winter, wow, no winter, never got cold, never needed an overcoat. What a year. But the next year, 69, 70, 71, I can tell you if Elliot Rosner is listening, I don't know if he remembers, that year the rain began late. It never let up. Pesach, all Chol HaMoed, 7 straight days, it poured. Had it been Sukkot, you never would have made a bracha in the Sukkah. Wow. But I'll never forget that Pesach. Chol HaMoed, not one day that you could walk out of the house without an umbrella and boots. But all right, the ground needs grain. V'tein talu matal levracha. But you all know we waited 14 days for the people to get back to Babylonia. If I had my way, let it rain between 9 o'clock at night to 5 o'clock in the morning. Isn't that what the Medrash says? Don't interfere with the humans. Camelot, that's right. That's exactly it. Camelot, we believed it with JFK, Camelot. All right. to summarize, what did we do today? Well, we hit the heart of the testimony. We still want to fill you in on Rav Lezer Silva and how it reflects, you'll see, who Solomon Goldman was. We haven't hit that yet. Right now, it's just the ABCs. Mordechai Kaplan comes up time and again, insoluble. And the great deal of what subsequently happens in Torah world, for good or for bad. You know, the right-wing world will say it's fabulous. Imagine if the Brooklyn element would have gone along with Mordechai Kaplan, where would we be today? Where would Torah Vadas be today? Where would Chaim Berlin be today? There would have been a big compromise. Yishiv Shulchan was leading the pack, and it would have worked out, and endless money. But Mordechai Kaplan couldn't be solved. Next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up with one of the most fascinating questions you'll ever meet. Only it's just life. It's life. Not an earth-shaking question. We're not dealing with Aguna. We're not dealing with Mamzerut. But it's amazing how Reb Menashe Klein answered every question he got, including your davening in a house in Woodmere and what the halakhic implications may be. The freebies. I have another copy of this wonderful article on the Reb Shol Alter who split up care today. This article has been hailed as being excellent on the websites, and I'm proud that I said to Malta on Shabbos, beautiful article, no negativisms. Anyone who wants it, please. Jack, this is for you if you didn't see it. It's unbelievable. These are pictures of Israel that we have here, land scenes that are the equal of any beautiful place in the world. And here it is. It's something very, very special. Here's an unbelievable article. God have mercy. Yomo, don't leave. I want to deal with you with the announcement. An unbelievable article on a Holocaust survivor in Italy who's a lifetime member of the Senate in her 90s. And when she walks out of the house, she needs bodyguards supplied by the government because of all the anti-Semitism directed at her that she speaks about the Holocaust. Beyond words, what we're up against. This is Ynet, and it's description of the split and gear. But this article is not as good as the one in Hebrew. This is Stephen Gross, very interesting. You probably are aware Michael Bloomberg is considering being a candidate for the President of the United States, and it's interesting to see who he is and the criticisms. This is by a conservative rabbi in Forest Hills, Rabbi Gerald C. Skolnick from Anapestet to Pittsburgh. It's a beautiful article, and he makes the point that we all thought when we saw Anatevka that it's all over, and now that anti-Semitism is right here in the United States. A YU ordained rabbi takes unlikely post. Can't believe this one. Out of the box, Interfaith Theological School in Berkeley, California. An Orthodox rabbi from the East Coast built a sukkah on a balcony outside his office last year, eating his ritual meals alone. Rabbi Daniel Lehman was so busy getting to know the students and faculty in the Graduate Theological Union that he didn't take time away from his duties to join others in the institution's long-standing sukkah in front of a classroom building. And the article goes on and on. And you'll see, they ask who is role models. What an article, what a story. And I taught a Daniel Lehman, but I think it's someone else from Baltimore, not from where he was raised. This is unbelievable. If you want to have fancy kosher food in America, you have to go to Crown Heights. A description of the restaurants in Crown Heights. I'm not wealthy enough even to dream Crown Heights, and look what you have. This is on the Democratic Party, on Sanders, the candidate Bernie Sanders. The debate over aid to Israel rattles pro-Israel Democrats, and that's why Mark is succeeding, signing up Jews for the Republican Party. This is also very interesting. Everyone got excited. Herbie, one second. Amazon is opening in Israel, and they opened and evidently got nowhere. I don't understand what's going on exactly.
They opened it, but they didn't push it. They didn't advertise. They didn't do anything.
Amazon. Yeah, that makes sense. And once again, I want to mention October. It's still online, but
it's just
stores that got together. It's not Amazon. No one, or no. November 28th, OU Center, 7:30 p.m. A young man is discussing the class of 1960 revisited. Who was the Rav? Anyone interested? Welcome to come.
What are the two questions connected? The class is the class, and the Rav is the Rav.
Yitzchak, you've heard me enough years to have confidence that I'm not playing games. I will absolutely connect the class of 1960 with who was the Rav. 100%. November 28th. Gentlemen, once again, these pictures are probably not real in the sense it's not the grandchildren, but the message is unbelievable. It was beautiful, the articles. These ladies were frontline medics in the last war we fought. They saved many lives. I have many grandchildren who were medics in the army, and some of them wound up in...
These girls are not connected to...
No, it doesn't seem. They can't even identify. They think these are Hungarian Jews.
I found a picture on the internet. I sent it to you.
I know. Zelikov.
It says the names of the women, where they are. It gives more details on the show.
But the point is, these were Jewish women in 44, and these are Jewish women in 2019. Yeah. The point is well taken. Wait, let me go further. 1 second, I have more to give out. Anyone want the latest issue of Tradition? They've changed its cover. It's now more sexy, pardon the word.
You're right.
And
are you giving that away? No.
No, I'm not giving that away, but he wants to show it to his sister. I want to thank, first of all, with the German article, I want to thank Charlie Hexter. You did the translation, Charlie? Wow, you're going to get a PhD in German, not only in chemistry. Can I inherit? Rabbi Shmuel Schneerson of Lubavitch and the False Twilight of Chabad. Very interesting article. How many of you know about Lubavitch? How many of you has interest? Gentlemen, it's a powerful movement. When the Tzemach Tzaddik died, the shift went after not Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel was his youngest son. There was many of his other children were Chassidic Rebbeim, and they figured the Chassidus will die gradually as these children die out. And this is about Rav Shmuel Schneerson, how he resuscitated the Chabad, and he becomes the father of Rav Shalom Dov Be'er, the father of Yosef Yitzchak, the father of Rav Menachem Mendel, the father-in-law of Rav Menachem Mendel. What's fascinating about this article was the personality of Rav Shmuel. He told jokes. He was one of the boys and learning around the clock. But if someone came into the house, he hid the svarim. He didn't want anyone to know how learned he was. Here's an article about the earliest celebration at Chabad, Simchas Torah. And it's when the Rebbe first arrived, must be 42, 43, and 42, let's say. And the yeshiva that participated, of Chaim Berlin, the Sefer Torah Hadas, and eich talmidim from yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan. Not only the yeshivas in Brooklyn, but even Reb Yitzchok Chanan sent talmidim or talmidim came. This is, if anyone is interested, I hate to throw things out. I have a dear friend, Rabbi Dr. Israel Drazen.
Oh, yes.
That's the son of Nathan Drazen.
Correct.
He's also a general in the American Army.
A chaplain
is a general too. One-star general. He's in his house. He has his own flag. A general constructs his own personal flag. And there, the man has a world of knowledge in various fields. You know, you look at him, he looks, one of the boys. Wow. So he has a whole series of books. I gave some are upstairs on the Bible, on Nach. And he always quotes not just the traditional, but he quotes other sources. One of the people he quotes all the time is Arnold Ehrlich. So I was very curious, who the heck is Arnold Ehrlich? Well, check him out. A Jew from a family of tzaddikim, goyim and Eloi, married a girl later, brought him, she has to leave him, he's not from anymore, not from enough for her. He winds up in seminaries and rabbinic schools, and it seems at one point a great Christian scholar wants him to assist him, and he wants him to convert, and he does some conversion ceremony to Protestantism. This ruins his life, because later JTS, or Hebrew Union College, will not hire him. He reaches America, and the man published was a scholar, never happy with people, never could do small talk, never could go to Yankee Stadium. He died in 1919, so I'm before my times, never could go to the polo grounds. It's just books, knowledge. His second wife was an orphan, protected him, and there's a very interesting part here that came up. I can't go into more detail now, in 50 years I will. But sometimes we have a treasure, and you know, we think, well, how can we release it? This thing is worth money. And his wife had some of his notebooks, and she refused to release it. She wanted a fortune of money for it. And ultimately, he dies, and she dies, and the books get lost, they become meaningless to the children. So a good deal of his scholarship is lost. But very interesting research here. I have the Wikipedia article, and then I have another article of a student of his. Interesting description. So if anyone is intellectually curious, who is Arnold Ehrlich, here it is. Do we quote him? He was a Bible scholar, had tremendous ability with words, with language. So it could be as a minor source after you've gone through Shas and Paiskim, Midrashim and Zohar and the traditional Mefarshim. All right, you look in Lahagdil Torah Lahadira.
Grayson quotes him all the time.
Grayson quotes him all the time.
Because I receive his weekly messages.
Right.
Some of them don't seem to be so organized.
No, he's if he's quoting him and quoting others, he enjoys showing another pshat, which is different than
some
the rabbinic tradition.
Some of these other pshatim are not really.
You're not a kanoi, but the truth is the truth. I often, one book he wrote, I couldn't give him a skama. I say I disagree. He wrote in the Ramban, and he shows all the times the Ramban didn't totally understand Targum Unculus. All right, no one has to be a genius in Targum Unculus like Israel Dresden or like, for the sake of argument, of Chaim Heller. But to me, all right, it's scholarship. I take it with a grain of salt. You follow Yitzchak? When he writes, he raises good questions, like Yiftach with his daughter. How did you make a vow like that? All right, so Chazal struggled with it. We all struggle with it. So he quotes Arnold Ehrlich's pshat. All right.
From Beryl 1, you quote Paul Johnson, History of the Jews. So.
Well, Paul Johnson was a good Gentile. He loved the Jewish people.
Yeah,
he really understood. All right, I just want to thank everybody for coming. You've given me, but you have no idea how sick I was yesterday afternoon. Yoma, where are you going? Don't run out of me. I need your help, you understand? Where will I meet you? Downstairs near Ron Rob Shaw. Okay, we made a deal.
By the way, not only Paul Johnson, Sachs quotes Paul Johnson all the time. The truth is, anybody who wants to study and know about Jews, who has to read Johnson.
Well, yeah.
How he writes about us.
And how a Gentile understands us as
so
well.
He wrote an article once on anti-Semitism. It's amazing. Really, you say,
listen,
who paid us for this?
We got to read Mark Twain, and that says it all. Till we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Thank you so much. Vic, one second. What happened to the reporters? Here they are. anyone wants, take, please.